Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we take a look at the director's cut of Zack Snyder's Watchmen, 1 minute at a time. My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
I'm Eric Nash.
And I'm Thomas Butler from the Philip Glass Fan Club for Men, where I'm not just the president, I'm also a client.
And I'm not only a member, I'm also the treasurer. Welcome back, Thomas.
Thank you, guys. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Minute 73 starts with Janie saying she made a face and ends with John and Janie making love for the first time.
My first note for this minute is that Billy Crudup is so good at playing someone who's really bad at giving a convincing compliment. Oh, no, I'm sure that you'll look beautiful.
Yeah.
All while shaking his head, that subconscious signal that he is not telling the truth.
Yeah, I love that we get a little bit. It's weird because you forget that you haven't really seen Billy Crudup in the movie. I mean, we sort of have, but, you know, he's been under a layer of digital paint, you know, the entire time. And I think the chemistry between these two is probably my favorite in the whole movie. I mean, granted, there aren't too many relationships in the movie, but just the performances that these two give feels very real playing off of each other right here. So,
yeah, I don't mean to downplay. I think he plays John Osterman is somebody who's sort of shy and reserved, and
yeah,
he's not really sure how to give a good compliment. He means it. He's just not totally convincing, at least to me.
He's not as suave and charismatic as Wally Weaver.
Oh yeah, look at that guy. Look at that smug guy.
That guy's got swagger. Yeah.
John's old friend from college.
Yeah. here's where I want to push up my glasses and say, well, in the book.
Well, actually.
Actually. Yeah.
They had just met when John moved to Arizona.
Right, yeah.
He's introducing him around the lab. You know, one thing that we miss, that we don't get in the movie, is John's first introduction to Gila Flats.
Right.
And he shakes hands with the director of research, whose name, I would point out, is Professor Glass.
Yeah.
Philip Glass?
Anthony? No. I was just looking at it earlier today because the end of that, kind of this chapter of the story starts or ends with like his paper kind of summarizing his thoughts on the arrival of, Professor Milton Glass.
Milton Glass. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they kind of roll some of, I think one or two of his lines get rolled into Wally Weaver's character. And then I know when the image of Wally we get here, you know, when he talks about him dying of cancer, there's an image in, I think in the book where it looks where Milton Glass dies of cancer. I'm thinking of John's father dies in his hospital bed. And it looks a lot like the scene that we get here with Wally where he's kind of looking looking like a corpse kind of.
Yeah, I was trying to find that earlier. You're right. I was looking for that frame of Wally. You're right. It's not Wally. It's his father.
Yeah. I think kind of as Wally kind of sidles up to the two of them, I think he says, "Hello, lovebirds," as they're kissing.
That's what I read, too.
Okay. I thought it could have been lovebirds or lovers, but definitely.
I would never say hello, lovers.
Yeah.
To my best friend and his and his new girlfriend, especially
right.
While I've got my own girlfriend under my arm, around my arm, around her. What's the
on course? My arm?
What's the configuration
under your thumb?
On my arm.
Under my thumb.
Wrong shirt.
All right. Yeah, I like Wally.
Yeah.
He's got a nice smile. He looks very affable. He seems very popular. He's got a pretty girl next to him. And then as soon as we meet him, as soon as we get to like him, he's dead.
Yeah. That's kind of going back to that. John is presenting all of this as if it's, you know, happening kind of in the moment. So it is, it's jarring that you do see Wally, and then it's February 12th, 1981, Wally dies of cancer. But I like that they, you know, he brings it back to saying that they now say I'm the cause. So real quick note about February 12th, 1981 is that's Lincoln's birthday. So just throwing that out there.
Any particular birthday of significance?
Oh, I guess you mean the year. Yeah, I don't know when.
History was not my strong suit. Time is not a thing that makes sense, as I like to say on my own show.
Sure.
The chronological order of things is kind of overrated.
Ah. I was just going to say then that you and Dr. Manhattan have a lot in common.
More than you know.
I would have to think that Lincoln was born probably around 1800, but 1809.
Nice. Closest without going over.
Yeah. we also see, you know, Rob LaBelle, who plays Wally. And then he also has his I'm assuming, girlfriend with him, and she's played by Carly Bentall. Bent all out of shape.
But she's not. She's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She has 5 acting credits from 2007 to 2017. I guess things that more recent are an episode of The Good Doctor and an episode of Timeless. So I've not seen either of those shows, but she has appeared on them. So
I like her earrings. And her bow. And I like her skirt.
I like her smile.
She's a nice looking lady.
Yeah.
I like it. Like her tilted head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So then, let's see. So we have the carnival, kind of, and they're playing games and everything. And this is where I started to notice the prophecies, you know, the lyrics that go with the prophecies song. Did you have notes on that, Thomas?
Well, it sounds like you've gotten the translations of the prophecies.
I
can tell you a little bit about them. They are, obviously, it's from, this is all, as we discussed last minute, this is the soundtrack to the film Koyaanisqatsi. The name, that weird word, is a Hopi kind of construction that's meant, it doesn't translate exactly, but it's mostly loosely translated as life out of balance, because that's sort of the message of that film, or a way of life that requires another way of living. And and so the only spoken chant in, or the only chanted lyrics in this film, are just right at the very end, these prophecies. And so, Travis, if you want to go ahead and let us know what we're in for, this is some pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna try to, you know, do the actual lyrics that are
give us the Hopi.
No, I think I'm gonna just do the translations. So
there is no Hopi for any of us.
There is another.
It's all Hopis lost.
It's a new Hopi.
Yeah.
Rock show.
So the first line is, if we dig precious things from the land, we will invite disaster. So that certainly would tie into what I imagine is a big part of that, you know, the movie, and, you know, how man kind of destroys his own, you know, his own land kind of thing.
Sure, the digging of natural resources to the harnessing of atomic power.
Sure.
Relevant here.
Yeah. The second line says, near the day of purification, there will be cobwebs spun back and forth in the sky.
Eerie.
I kind of think that sounds like, and I'm not a chemtrail, but like think of rockets, you know, in their exhaust trails you know, going back and forth in the sky. If you were on the ground looking up and seeing a bunch of these trails from like nuclear war, that might look like a spider web.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
So maybe that's kind of I don't know.
You're just crisscrossing the sky.
Yeah. The last line here is, a container of ashes might one day be thrown from the sky, which could burn the land and boil the oceans. I'm not too clear on that one. A container of ashes.
It might make more sense in the context of the film Koyaanisqatsi.
Sure.
I mean, spoilers for a completely non-narrative film. At the end, the final scene is a shot of a rocket which launches actually at the beginning of the film, and we follow it up into the sky, and up it goes, and finally it explodes.
There's
something goes wrong with the launch, and for the rest of the scene, the rest of this piece, prophecies that we're hearing, the chanted prophecies, and we're watching as this piece of debris goes spinning and burning and smoking down towards the ground, and it just continues forever and ever, and the time stretch, that slow motion, causes it to just always be spinning and falling in the sky, and there's no end to it. Hmm. Apocalyptic.
It's heavy. Yeah. And all this while John is winning a carnival game and getting this googly-eyed bear that he gives to Janie.
You know, everyone looks so happy in this scene.
Yeah.
They are all smiling, even the extras behind. They're just watching these tourists play this game, and they are so happy for them. They have won a bear, and it looks like Wally's won a bear, too, and given it to his friend.
I think it's a pig.
A pig?
Yeah.
A teddy pig, yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe she won it.
Yeah, right.
I noticed just to the right of Wally and his girlfriend, there's an arcade game, and we can kind of see some of it's a little bit obscured, but there's like an astronaut type cartoon character on the side of it, and the words "blast off" and "Mars" are visible. I assume it says "blast off to Mars."
Huh.
I tried looking up that you know, "blast off to Mars" to see if it was possibly a real arcade game from the time, or maybe like a pinball kind of thing, but couldn't find anything related to this. So I'm assuming then that it's created specifically for the movie, and that, you know, ties in, of course, to that's where John's headed.
You know? And what color is that astronaut's spacesuit?
If I remember, it's kind of bluish white, wasn't it? Are you looking at the image?
It's a light blue, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a light blue, kind of like a blue light.
Huh.
Clever.
Yeah.
There's always more layers. The more you watch a film like this, you just notice new things. Speaking of arcades and games, I notice in the background we've got some really scary porcelain masks, the ones from Super Mario Brothers 2.
I'm just waiting for them to
fly up and like attack me, and I can't attack them back. That was a traumatic experience.
Are those the characters, like the rest of them? They're kind of like red, like on their backs, like it's like
they're
a red
cloth. They're just faces. Good. They're just. Faces with these black soulless eyes, and they take off into flight, and
eyes like a doll's eyes.
They run around at you as long as you're holding this artifact, but if you drop the artifact, they'll stop. Okay. But you need to take it, so you have to run away from them. It's terrifying when you're single digits years old.
Anything else for the carnival?
Nothing, but we do get that she's still holding that popcorn. She
hasn't
quite finished it.
Yeah, and she's always kind of posing with the popcorn. That's might be a little too actory, like not sure what to do with my hands, so I'm just going to hold this popcorn as if I'm...
It's not a bad idea for a first date.
Yeah.
Something to do with your hands.
Mm.
Does anyone ever finish a popcorn?
Yes. Like
it's always too much. It's always too big. All right.
Half the time, about.
Lay off. I'm starving.
Yeah. in her other hand, though, it seems like it's her purse, as well as at this point, she's holding his jacket, his like beige jacket that he was wearing. He's not upon throwing in order to get a better throw.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can't expect to win, to compete at tournament level whatever this game is called, big league pitcher.
Yeah.
Wearing a jacket. You just can't. You got to roll up those sleeves. He didn't even take off his cufflinks, though.
Mm.
He's still got the long sleeves down. So he's maybe he's got some latent talent. Maybe if he hadn't become a scientist, he could have been a
big league pitcher.
Pitcher tournament player.
Sportsman. So, yeah, I guess then later on that evening.
And the Bear's on the floor.
I had the same note. I literally have the Bear is on the floor. Which I think kind of sounds like a euphemism for getting down. Which we see these two...
Putting the bear on the floor?
Putting the bear on the floor, yeah.
I'll never get that image out of my head.
Hey, baby, my bear's on the floor.
Thanks, you've just strengthened that that mental image for me. I'm going to have trouble getting to sleep tonight. Yes, the bear is on the floor, and they are enjoying each other's company.
Oh, yeah.
As God intended.
With the room mostly dark, a little bit of light coming in through the door.
Through a hole in the sheet.
Covers over.
And there's a watch. Well, we don't get to that part, do we, in this minute?
No, I think that starts next.
Well, guys, I have very little to say about this scene. I kind of... This is the point in the movies where I tend to... just avert my eyes. I cover my eyes with my hands and just say, ew. Kissing.
Right. You know, you're allowed to look at this type of movie without looking away now.
You're right. I am 18 or older.
I just assumed. I mean, I guess you could have been.
But thanks for the permission.
Yeah. Now that you have the Watchmen Minute seal of approval to...
Well, I'll look at this scene in a new light from now on.
Good. Just remember, the bear's on the floor.
I think we got the name of the episode.
Thomas, do you remember the first time you read Watchmen or
put the bear saw on the
this?
Floor?
Well, I was going to say that, but I thought it might have been one time too many. So I'm glad you took that ball and ran with it.
So to speak. I think I didn't read the book until after I knew that there was a movie coming. I tend to do that kind of thing. I'm not so good at reading, guys.
So no history and no reading. Okay.
I know. I wish I could go back. I wish I could say that my history goes back that far with it, but I think I saw the trailer first. I want to say it was at the Coolidge Theater in Boston, in front of some movie. I wasn't really watching that many movies, so it was either Juno or I Heart Huckabees. That's what I was watching back then, guys. Is that the right timeline? I'm not even sure. But I saw the trailer. It looked neat. I don't even remember whether I'm not sure I registered that there was Philip Glass music in the trailer, but the thing I remember most is the glass fortress coming up out of the sands of Mars, and just being really impressed with how Dr. Manhattan looked. That was the thing that stuck with me. So then I sought out the books and finally read them, and was blown away. It's just an amazing story. And just it's amazing what they did with the comic book medium, commenting on it and expanding it and doing all kinds of crazy stuff with it. And then I don't think I went to see the movie in theaters. I think I waited till it was on home video, but I was impressed with it. I liked it. It does a good job of adapting the story, and I understand why they made certain changes. But The book is really something else. And for this, in preparation for recording with you guys, I went back and have started rereading the book. I'm not quite finished with it, but I did read the what corresponded to the minutes. And I also read the Before Watchmen series with that covers the Dr. Manhattan backstory. And there's some pretty interesting stuff in there. It takes kind of an expanded look at Dr. Manhattan's reflecting and moving through time. And it also covers a little bit of what he does after he speaks to Ozymandias in that final scene and goes off and creates human life on another planet. Little known fact, he comes back the next year and splits into three bodies again and forms a multimedia performance art troupe in New York.
That's good to know.
And that's my history with The Watchmen.
Awesome. So really we just need to find out where Blue Man Group is performing and we'll ask them about time and space.
Come to Boston, guys, because we've got those guys. We've got some copies of those guys here. He's spread out across America. He's got different triplets of himself in different cities. But yeah, come on over. We'll ask those guys the deep questions about the nature of the universe, and we'll have a Koyaanisqatsi viewing party.
That sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Are you aware of the Doomsday Clock comic books currently coming out?
They just came to my attention the other day, and I was just reading about them today. Mm-hmm. No, I hadn't known about them, but they're crossing over with other DC characters now, huh?
That's the main idea.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I think I'm 3 issues into the 4 that have been released. So, but I know they've hit some, delays.
Oh yeah. They're even going to the one every 2 months bi-monthly. Starting around now ish.
Well, keep me posted. Let me know how that goes.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed the first 3 issues. I need to reread the first issue twice, I think. And so I need to reread, 2 and 3, just cause I kind of went through them as quickly as I could just to absorb, or just to, like a kid on Christmas, I guess, but I need to go back over them and really, look at what.
Is it as well written? I mean, does it cover the kinds of themes you would expect from a Watchmen story, or is it like diluted and just sort of, I don't know.
From my perspective, it's a little hard to say. It kind of feels like someone's trying to write like Alan Moore.
Hmm.
Like it kind of has a similar tone, but it's slightly off. I really like the art. I don't know where it's Gary Frank, but I don't know that I've ever seen his art anywhere else. It's kind of a slow burn, like as far as the story, like it feels like it's taking a while to really get going, which is good. I mean, it shouldn't be.
Well, there are only 3 issues so far.
Exactly. So it's hard to know like what kind of like what's going on.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it, and it seems to have the same, story beats kind of thing.
Man, we are really selling the hell out of Doomsday Clock.
Yeah, I'm not.
I think I'm ready to wrap it up if you guys are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got nothing else for this minute.
Cool. And I think we should all return for minute 74. Till then, who watches the Watchmen?
We do.
We do. And the bear is on the floor.
Watchmen are over.